Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+, simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.
Well, the stereotype is that conservative religious types are closed-minded. They can't think outside the parameters of their religious presuppositions or their ideologies. Is that true? On the other side of the spectrum, we have the secular progressives who are often portrayed and portray themselves as thoroughly open-minded, able to think from anyone's point of view and see all perspectives, understand them, evaluate them, and be able to either accept or dismiss them accordingly. Is there something wrong with the stereotype? And can it be demonstrated, really, that secular progressives, especially in the academy, have been slowly closing their minds for decades? Joining us to talk about this, Dr. Frank Beckwith, professor of philosophy and church-state studies at Baylor University. He's author of several books, including Politics for Christians, and he's also written an article for The Catholic Thing called The Closing of the Secular Progressive Mind. Dr. Beckwith, welcome back.
It's great to be on. Thank you for having me.
When you taught in secular academia, did you already then see the closing of the secular progressive mind?
You know, a little bit. I taught for 7 years at the University of Nevada in Las Vegas between 1989 and 1996. And there was a moment, I think in the probably 92 or 93, where I was teaching an undergraduate course called Contemporary Moral Issues, where we go over a variety of different points of view on different issues. Now, of course, as you know, I mean, I have my own views on issues like abortion and euthanasia and the nature of human sexuality. And so my students encounter, obviously, those perspectives, but I also expose them to views that I didn't agree with and gave them, I thought, were the best accounts of those views. Well, one of my colleagues in another department, she saw that I was teaching this class, and we actually shared the same floor with this other department, and we were in the faculty lounge, and she asked me, she goes, you know, I've got to ask you this question. How could you teach this course of contemporary moral issues? Because obviously you're a committed Christian and you have this bias. How can you teach it fairly? And I just was stunned by this question. And I said, well, what do you believe, Barbara? And she said, now, you're a feminist, you disagree with me on these issues, could you teach them fairly? And she said, yes. And I said, well, what's the difference? And it was remarkable to see her face, because she just said, she looked at me kind of quizzically, and she said, oh, I'd never thought of that before. And I think this is part of the problem. It isn't so much that the secular progressives, some of whom are friends of mine, who I think are dear people who I respect and love, I think some of them think that their view is sort of like so obvious, the kind of as obvious as the sky is blue, that to even suggest otherwise is to sort of, you know, make a claim like leprechauns exist or something like that. They and so when it was brought to her attention, this colleague of mine, that in fact, you know, we both come to these issues with different assumptions and presuppositions and beliefs about these questions, she sort of had never thought about that before. And I think this is a lot more prevalent now than it was when I began teaching in the early 90s.
Is it, I think what's often assumed is that the secular progressive has really kind of thoroughly examined the claims or the arguments of religious conservatives, for lack of a better term, and been able to find a solid way of refuting them. And then, because it's been examined and refuted, they're able to dismiss them. Is that true anymore?
I think there are very few people writing today in the secular academy that really know what religious conservatives believe. They think they know what religious conservatives believe, and oftentimes their books become popular and are quoted, you know, in the media and so forth. Let me give an example: is the four, or at least three of the four books that came out in the past 15 years by the writers known as the New Atheists. Richard Dawkins' book, The God Delusion, which was a huge bestseller. When I first read it when it came out, I was astonished at how little Dawkins knew about Christian theology, what we believe about the nature of God, the arguments for God's existence. His section on Thomas Aquinas' arguments for God's existence, for example, is so bad that Alvin Plantinga, the philosopher at Notre Dame, said that if he would want to call the argument sophomoric, but that would be an insult to sophomores. That's how. But what's happened, though, is that when you're in an academy that's insular, that is where everyone's talking to each other, and plus you include the stakes that are very high in the culture wars, there's really no incentive for these folks to actually be accurate or to care, because all that matters is winning. And if they can win without taking the time to understand people or to engage in a kind of demonization, then they do it. And it's much worse than it's ever been.
Is it dishonesty or ignorance or a mixture of the two of them, Frank?
Yeah, I don't know if it's really dishonesty in this sense. I think it's like, you know, probably a good analogy would be, you know, we all do this as Christians. So I'm going to sort of, I've done this. You know, as I grew up as a Christian, I would sometimes caricature or misunderstand, not intentionally, but sort of what other people believed. And then as I got older, I understood, even though I didn't come to agree with them, I thought, you know, maybe I the way in which I was reading these people with whom I disagree was sort of to protect myself rather than to try to understand the truth better. So I think there's something like that going on among secularists, a kind of, you know, subconscious belief that, my gosh, what if it turns out these people are right? I have to protect myself. I don't think it's a conscious thing, and I think in many cases these folks are sincere and they're not, you know, intentionally trying to be unfair. I think there are some cases like that, but in most cases it isn't. But I do think it's a sense of also being around people that, you know, everybody that you know, who you consider smart and intelligent and wise, agrees with you. You tend to think anyone outside of that circle, there's probably something wrong with them. And it isn't worth carefully examining what they believe.
With only about a minute here before we take a break, is part of it the nature of kind of the secular academy as it is, that it does tend to become an echo chamber? It does tend to isolate and insulate the academics inside of it from ideas outside of it.
I think that's right. I've seen it in my own experience, having written on several controversial issues. Now with the internet being so ubiquitous, I once in a while will Google my name and see what people are saying about this or that thing I've written, and it's sort of amazing to see how people just simply repeat the same thing. In other words, they clearly have not read what I've written. They just simply rely on what some other person said and simply repeat it. And it's, yeah, and of course they're thinking, as I trust this person, and you know, I don't want to take the time to investigate it on my own.
Dr. Frank Beckwith is our guest. We'll take a break, and when we come back, some more conversation with him on secular progressives' close-mindedness. A couple examples of how it works on this Friday afternoon, January the 17th. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. About another 15 minutes with Dr. Frank Beckwith. Then we'll play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week.
Are you concerned about weight gain during the holidays? Work out this winter at Arch Fitness of Cottage Hills, Illinois. Arch Fitness offers adult boot camps on weekday evenings and on weekday and Saturday mornings. For more information, check out the Facebook fan page for Arch Fitness or call Kevin Reisick at 618-670-6952. Arch Fitness is located at 127 West MacArthur Drive in Cottage Hills, Illinois. Win the war against winter weight. Arch Fitness of Cottage Hills, Illinois.
Thank you for helping us make budget again last year. Thanks to your support, Lutheran Public Radio has been independent and in the black for almost 6 years. You've heard us say, now only our listeners can cancel us, and we mean it. Thanks for listening, thanks for your prayers, and thanks for your financial support. Christ-centered, cross-focused talk radio for the world, issues, etc., and sacred music for the world, LutheranPublicRadio.org. We're looking forward to partnering with you in 2014.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Does your church need a backup organist? The virtual organist service from Church Music Solutions is the next best thing to an on-site organist. Send us your musical choices, including liturgy and hymns. We'll assemble your service and send it to an iPad that controls your church's organ on Sunday. The result is genuine organ leadership on your instrument with your selections when you need it. See our videos on YouTube or visit our website at churchmusicsolutions.com.
Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+, simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.
People who claim we're being inconsistent simply haven't read what Christians have believed from the beginning. That is, Jesus is the fulfillment of the law.
What you've got in Auslan is a piece of reductionism where Jesus is reduced to the time in which he lives.
The church is aware of its own blemishes and difficulties and sins, and Christ sees none of it. And that, of course, is the gospel.
Their baptism was using the same water that Jesus was using in the Jordan. It's called H2O.
A little taste of the four soundbites we're going to be playing for you when we play Issues, Etc. soundbite of the week in the last half hour or so of today's program. You can listen in advance at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand, and you will find the soundbites to listen to. You can also vote in advance or give us a call, 1-877-623-MYIE, talkback at issuesetc.org, or vote in advance at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc, facebook.com/issuesetc. Dr. Frank Beckwith is our guest, professor of philosophy and church-state studies at Baylor University. We're talking about the secular progressives' closed-mindedness. You have a couple examples that you give in your article, the first one dealing with the sanctity of human life. How would you play that out for us to demonstrate what it is you're talking about?
Well, oftentimes you'll hear from people that are secular progressives that pro-lifers are inconsistent. That is to say, a pro-lifer believes that the unborn should be protected by the law, but the claim on the part of the secular progressive is, well, you people don't care about children after they're born. And there are a couple of reasons why I think, you'll also get the secular progressive suggesting that when the pro-lifer doesn't support certain types of social welfare programs, or let's say, the pro-lifer doesn't want to support the funding of abortion or contraception, the secular progressive will call the person selfish or greedy or not compassionate and so forth. One of the things that it's always occurred to me about that rhetoric, and by the way, I'm not suggesting that religious conservatives or pro-lifers don't think that there isn't a place for the community to support those who need help. That has clearly always been part of the pro-life vision. And for that reason, pro-lifers have always been in the forefront of great works of mercy, including crisis pregnancy centers, putting homes together for, or finding homes for women who are unwed, and so forth. So that's always been part of the infrastructure of the pro-life movement. But having said that, one of the things that had always occurred to me when I'd hear this rhetoric was, you know, it sounds like the secular progressive is saying that the pro-lifer, let's say you have a pro-life woman who is pregnant, the secular progressive is saying that that woman has a greater obligation for the welfare of the children of strangers than the own, than the one care, that she's carrying in her own womb, which is really kind of a strange thing to believe. I mean, essentially what the person is saying is that the woman who has the abortion is exercising her rights. That is, the pregnant woman who has the abortion exercising her rights. But if that same pregnant woman says, I don't want to take care of my neighbor's child through my tax dollars, she's selfish, but it's okay for her to believe that it is permissible to eliminate her own child, which means that secular progressivism wants to, or at least, and maybe this isn't intended, but the message that comes across is there are no special responsibilities that we have to those that are closest to us, that we don't learn charity in home and hearth, that it is something that simply we extend to strangers through government. I can't think of a more, I think, soul-killing way of thinking about our relationship to those that we love the most or we ought to love the most. Now, again, I'm not suggesting that my secular progressive friends don't love their families or don't love their children. They certainly do. And again, some of my dearest friends hold these views. But I, what I tried to do in this article is to try to explain to them, this is what it sounds like to us. And this is one reason why it's important that you surround yourself with people, or at least come in contact with people with whom you disagree, so you can understand why they may not hold the views that you do. It's not because they're mean or nasty. It's because they hold up a particular vision of what the good life is, and it begins with those closest to us. That's the point that I was making in that example.
Well, does it also demonstrate, at least that example, a pretty profound ignorance of history, given the fact that, and of the current situation, let's just say in the United States, where, for instance, Catholic Charities account for some enormous percentage, majority percentage, of all charitable work being done.
That's right.
It simply cannot be factually demonstrated that pro-life Christians don't also care about mother and child in any other circumstance.
That's absolutely right. In fact, you know, you mentioned Catholic Charities. In the city that I live in, Waco, Texas, we have two hospitals. We have two hospitals are Providence Catholic, Hillcrest Baptist. This is true of most communities in the United States. Virtually every community has some hospital connected to some Christian or Jewish denomination. And so when I read, for example, secular progressives saying things like, hospitals are secular activities, I think to myself, they have no idea that the reason why we have hospitals today, the reason why we have works of mercy today, is because Christians started it over a millennium ago. And now, of course, secularists have followed, but not because there's anything deeply true of pagan philosophy that leads to that. It's because they live in a culture that has been fully marinated in the idea that we should love our neighbor as ourselves. And so they think that's secular. It's not secular. It's Christian. It's biblical. It comes from that tradition. They've borrowed from it, and we're delighted that they have. But at least give credit where credit is due. They didn't invent it. We did.
Another example you give is on the issue of marriage. And this one has so quickly become just axiomatic. That is, anyone who opposes a redefinition of marriage can only be acting out of some sort of animus or prejudice against alternate orientations, sexual orientations, homosexuals, lesbians, gays, whatever it may be.
Yeah, you know, this is an issue that actually really kind of breaks my heart, because I remember the first time I spoke on this subject at a university. I've got to tell you, I was nervous because of the the vitriol that I anticipated, which did occur. But what breaks my heart about it is that there are people out there who actually believe that on a question of the nature of human sexuality, that those of us who hold the views that we do, that somehow they arise from hate, and not knowing, for example, our personal histories. In my case, I grew up in a city. I grew up in Las Vegas, Nevada, and I worked for several years in a candy store where many of my fellow workers were gay. And so to hear somebody say, you know, that this is where your heart is completely, I find it astonishing. But if you're indoctrinated into that belief, and you're told this is what people who disagree with you really have in their hearts, I mean, this is what you come to believe. And so it actually becomes then very difficult to articulate what we believe about the nature of marriage. And what we believe about the nature of marriage has to do with something fundamental to the way human beings are created. Namely, we are created as men and women. And as male and female, this is the place in which, in marriage, the place in which the two halves of the human race, the only two halves that nature knows, can meet and their discord united for the fulfillment of the common good and for any children that may result from that union. It's a deeply profound and beautiful thing that in most Christian traditions is connected to some sacrament or ordinance that is very sacred. And so to hear people say the only reason why you hold this is you have this animus, it's silly on one level, but deeply hurtful on the other. It's like, do you not even know what we believe? I mean, this is why I wrote the article. I just kind of got frustrated and thought, you know what? Someone's got to just say what we really believe.
Dr. Frank Beckwith is our guest. We're talking about the closed-mindedness of secular progressives on this Friday afternoon, January the 17th. When we come back, a few more minutes with him, then we're going to play Issues Etc., Soundbite of the Week. Join me for a Lenten preaching workshop Monday, January the 20th at Concordia Lutheran Church in Geneseo, Illinois. I'll be teaching on current problems in Lutheran preaching and biblical remedies for these problems. The registration fee is only $15 and includes lunch. For more information, contact Pastor Gary Wright at 309-236-3882. I'm looking forward to meeting you in Geneseo, Illinois on January the 20th. 309-236-3882.
South Africa.
China.
Germany.
Trinidad and Tobago.
Did you know that people listen to Issues Etc. around the world? India.
Sweden.
Egypt.
France.
Turkey.
Japan.
Australia.
Canada.
United Kingdom.
Hong Kong. Austria.
Finland. Malaysia.
Singapore. Bulgaria.
Korea. Brazil.
You can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Help us proclaim Christ to the world.
The Philippines,
Mexico,
Spain,
New Zealand,
Kuwait.
Do you have a student finishing up eighth grade at a Lutheran school? Do you wish there were a Lutheran high school close to where you live so your student could continue going to a Lutheran school? What if there was an opportunity for high school students in public or Lutheran school to take classes like Latin, logic, and hard-hitting theology courses? Well, there is. It's called Wittenberg Academy, the first completely online classical Lutheran high school. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The Church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tenderness.
the 6th century. The 12th century. The 16th century. The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Frank Beckwith is our guest. We're talking about secular progressives' closed-mindedness. Dr. Beckwith, a couple final quick questions for you. Do you think that if the Secular Progressive Academy would open its mind and actually do what it says it does, which was understand and tolerate all viewpoints on issues like we've been discussing here, do you think it would help?
I think it would help. I know from my own experience, having spent 7 years at the University of Nevada, and still, even though I'm at Baylor, which is a Christian school, I do a lot of speaking around the country. I think when students are exposed to a winsome, careful, intelligent presentation of traditional views on some of these controversial questions, they are really blown away because they're not expecting that. And so I think if you had a campus where there were, you know, professors holding these views and they, you know, were treated with respect and others treated them with respect, I think you would have the sort of conversation that I think should be occurring in the United States, but most importantly on college campuses.
Does it make your job a little easier if you were asked, you kind of know them in advance, if you're asked to debate someone publicly on one of these issues? I mean, I don't want to sound devious about it, but you might be able to assume going in that your opponent is at a disadvantage. They haven't taken the time to understand your viewpoints thoroughly enough.
That's happened a couple of times. I was actually, I've been in several debates and sometimes panel discussions, and I'm oftentimes, I think there was maybe one or two instances, but virtually every time I'm floored at the ignorance and of the other person. And in some cases, these are people that are very nice. They're intelligent. They're not, you know, they're not adversarial, but they really have kind of let their mind atrophy on questions that they think have been fully answered. And so, yeah, I mean, I've had this effect a couple of weeks ago, or it's been a year now. I was speaking, and there was a gentleman in the audience who criticized Christianity for the Crusades. And I asked him, I said, and he was a professor there, I said, well, tell me what you know about the Crusades. And it's clear he didn't know anything about it. and it was sort of shocking. I mean, and he was kind of embarrassed about it. But my point was simply say, okay, you brought this up. Let's have a discussion. What do you know about it? And I know a little bit about it. I've read. But this gentleman knew nothing. He just sort of dropped it out there because it's a useful one-liner that has apparently worked before. And so I think that individual would benefit from being in a community in which there are people that don't hold his view, that it'll force him to be a better scholar.
With about 20 seconds here, is the same true for the religious conservative? That is, should we keep our understanding of our opponent's views keenly in mind, attempt to avoid the kind of ignorance that the secular progressives have fallen into?
I absolutely agree, Todd. In fact, I make it a point in my classes introduce my students to people who sometimes actually have written things specifically against me because I think that they have to see that at the end of the day, if I want my students to agree with me, I would be doing them a disservice by giving them the weakest version of my opponent's arguments, because at the end of the day, they'll find out that I wasn't giving them the whole story.
Dr. Frank Beckwith is professor of philosophy and church-state studies at Baylor University. author of several books, including Politics for Christians, and he's also written an article for The Catholic Thing titled The Closing of the Secular Progressive Mind. You can read this column at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Beckwith, thank you very much for your time.
Well, thank you for having me.